WOVU-LP Cleveland.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Trey Modlin, news director here at WOVU 95.9 FM, Our Voices United. Welcome to a candid conversation with the Honorable Cleveland Mayor Justin Morris Bibb and our neighborhood media. I will now turn it over to Studio 3, into the hands of our Director General Manager, Jay Williams.
All right. You got a surprise on time today?
We are so honored and blessed to have in our main studio today the Honorable Mayor Justin Morris Bibb. He's here with us. He's getting situated. And we have our media partners in the room. And so for us, we are extremely excited. For those of you in our audience, you can call 216-271-0959. That's 216-271-0959. The DJ himself is about to get the Honorable Mayor. Welcome, sir. We're so glad to have you.
Good to be here, Jay. Good to be here.
And Rich is in your hands.
Thank you so much, and thank you for joining us, Mayor. This is our fourth community media only roundtable with Mayor Bibb. We're doing this on WOVU, which itself is a community media outlet that's important to all of you listeners out there because you understand how important this media outlet is to you. You hear your own voice on WOVU. That's what community media is all about. So everyone at this table represents an ethnic or community media outlet or some piece of the media community media ecosystem. So we're going to ask some questions of the mayor. We'll go around the table, and we'll start off right now. If we could, we'll start off with Mitch from the Lotus and FICA. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, first of all,
go ahead and grab the mic, Mitch.
Oh, forgot about that.
Thank you.
I just go instantly. All right. Well, I'm Mitch. We are part of FICA, and FICA stands for Federation of Indian Community Association. It's been there for, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 years, probably even before we were all born. Mm. Obviously, you know, I briefly spoke to the mayor when he came. But we are representing Lotus, our newspaper, our voice to the Indian community and the other community here is Lotus. So with us, I have Shekhar, who is FICA's president, Amit, vice president, and I recently joined as an executive member. And my question to you, has to do with employment. Mm. You know, what are we doing, in terms of generating more labor pool here?
Yeah.
I represent a good company called Raptite, and we are constantly struggling. And, you know, with it's like we have people, but where are they?
Yeah.
Why are we not finding the good pool?
Well, you mentioned a great point about employment, and I have to say, we are living in, I think, one of the best economies we have seen for workers in terms of the number of jobs available right now, not just in Cleveland and across the state of Ohio, but really across the country. Under President Biden's leadership, we've seen historic levels of unemployment, particularly among black and brown communities across the country. And in the city of Cleveland, as you've seen with our last two budgets, we've seen historic rates of low unemployment in Cleveland. And so this is a workers' economy. But we have to do more in terms of making sure not just the underemployed and unemployed, but that the next generation of workers are part of the present and future economy. So we're doing a couple things. Number one, we continue to work very closely with CMSD on their program called the Greater Cleveland Career Consortia. And this program really works very closely with local employers from the Cleveland Clinic to Lubrizol, to Sherwin-Williams, to university hospitals, to really expose young people to the jobs of the present and the jobs of the future. One example is that we have one of the only high schools in the country that's located inside of a hospital at MetroHealth Hospital, where high school students are getting hands-on experiences in the healthcare sector. The other thing I would say is we have to prepare Cleveland for the green jobs of the future. That's why I'm so excited that we have been spending over $10 million of American Rescue Plan funds we've gotten from President Biden's administration to really train Clevelanders for jobs in the built environment. Everything from weatherizing homes, so that means putting solar panels on homes, to laying fiber and broadband in every part of our city. And we're partnering with organizations like Cleveland Builds to expose high school students to these careers. So it's about exposing young people, better connecting funding and training programs for both adult workers and next generation workers, but also ensuring we're creating the right environment for good quality jobs in Cleveland. And one new policy that we deployed earlier this year, we have a brand new tax credit program that gives companies a 50% income tax credit over the next 5 years if they're hiring 50 more employees or more in the core city of Cleveland. And already that program has created over 500 new jobs right in the Ward 5 Central neighborhood. So we're doing a lot more to do, but this is the time for folks to get trained and work and be a part of Cleveland's economic renaissance.
Well, all of this is awesome to hear. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been bothering me for a long time.
Yeah.
We have work, and then why do we not have people?
Yeah.
And I'm glad to hear all of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
I don't know if my fellow members have anything to ask, but I'm...
We'll let others go, and then we'll come
okay.
back.
All right. Perfect. We'll pass the mic to Ronaldo Rodriguez from La Villa.
Hello. Thank you for having me here. I started La Villa. It's a new neighborhood publication centered around La Villa Hispania.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Cleveland's Latino community is the only demographic in the city that's growing, and I don't feel that City Hall has done a great job of communicating with people like me and mm-hmm. people in my community. I've reached out to the office to get information, important information from City Hall in Spanish. I communicated with Tyler Sinclair, the communications director, to get the last citywide job fair flyer posted in Spanish. And since I had already established a relationship with him, he was the first person I asked about the idea of establishing a sister city with the city in Puerto Rico. And he said that Puerto Rico does not qualify because it is a possession of the United States.
It's a territory of the United States, yeah.
It's not a nation. So I just wanted to hear what your thoughts were.
Well, first and foremost, this is something I talk often to with Councilwoman Jasmine Santana about in terms of how do we do a better job of making sure all of our literature and programming has a multilingual options at the city of Cleveland. So for the first time in nearly two decades, we have a brand new city website that comes in various different languages. We didn't have that capability and capacity before. Secondly, now if you walk into City Hall on the basement floor, you'll see brand new wayfinding signs on how to navigate City Hall in multiple languages. I would also say, we work very closely with Global Cleveland on all of our sister city relationships. And I'm open to the conversation on how we can strengthen ties with Puerto Rico. Now, it may not qualify for the traditional standard sister city relationship, given the context that it is a territory of the United States. However, it doesn't mean we can't have a city-to-city kind of partnership that we brand differently to enhance those ties. I know this is something that Councilwoman Santana has been championing as she's taken the helm at City Council. As you know, we have a direct flight now with Frontier Airlines directly to Puerto Rico, which is fantastic. And I welcome any ideas you have in terms of us enhancing that relationship, because it's so important for me as mayor that you feel a part of the change happening at City Hall, that you feel connected and that you feel seen and that your voice is heard. And so any ideas that you may have, please let us know. Work with Tyler Sinclair, work with Marie and my team, and we want to make sure that we're doing everything we can to get your voice heard across City Hall.
Thank you, Mayor Bibb. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. And I'm Rich Weiss. I I am the executive director of Neighborhood Media Foundation. I help put together these roundtables, and I support all of these outlets, ethnic and community outlets around Cleveland that are gathered around this table. I also am a publisher of The Tree Monster. And I moved into Tremont in 1992, back when, you know.
I was 5 years old then.
Outstanding. That's a
ripe old kindergartner.
and at the time, Tremont was not what it is.
Yeah.
What it became. But it was right at the right time. 1992, 93, they started coming around with flyers for the art walk. And the idea that restaurants, businesses, everybody can put art in their shops and just invite the community in, even storefronts that were vacant. We could open up and have people come in and have wine and cheese and have people see what it's like in this spot, looking out at the street from this direction. And Tremont West at the time was very intentional about this, and the people, the businesses that were behind it. When the artists come, the businesses follow. That was the concept. And they kept doing art walk every month and bringing more people in, and I watched it happen. Is that the kind of thing that is something that would be valuable today? I know that you're focused on jobs, and you're focused on employment, and the unemployment number is low. Is this the kind of thing that employers, small businesses, might be attracted by if we all started looking at our neighborhoods as potential Tremonts, where you could have arts attract people in?
I couldn't agree more with you, Rich. As someone who has lived all over the world and has studied cities for my entire professional life, I believe this. I believe that arts and culture represent the soul of a city. So let me tell you what that means for me. When you think about the early days of the U Street area in D.C., I remember as a college freshman going to HR 57, a jazz club on U Street. And it was the hub of the black professional class, regardless if you were a sanitation worker in D.C. government or working on Capitol Hill for the Speaker of the House. Everyone was there because the best jazz artists went there. Or you think about the Lower East Side in New York, where artists like Basquiat got their start, and it really changed the culture and the trajectory of the Lower East Side and Soho in New York. Or one of the best examples is, Malcolm X Boulevard and Frederick Douglass Avenue in Harlem, where almost every corner by the Apollo Theater, it was the place where you bought books, you bought art, you socialized, and it was the soul of Harlem and really the soul of New York. We have to create that soul in Cleveland, and we have it in pockets, and I'm seeing it happen in pockets. Just last week, I went to two artist events. One, a great new art brand called Contrast High partnered with a store called Exhibition for a pop-up arts exhibit at the Exhibition store on West 25th. And you have all these amazing artists and influencers and fashion designers coming together talking about art and culture and what's happening in the city. Or spoken word that's happening at my barber shop at Studio Lounges on St. Clair, where they're having, emerging artists come or having a comedy night. This is what creates the soul of a city. And we want to do everything we can at City Hall to promote arts and culture. That's why I'm the first mayor in history to elevate a senior leader in my administration, all focused on arts and culture. Rhonda Brown, the first ever art czar at City Hall, and her family own the first for-profit black-owned art gallery in the country, the Malcolm Brown Art Studio. First one in the country. And now she's taking that mantle and helping to really create a more robust and vibrant arts and culture scene in Cleveland. We are spending $3 million right now for our new Transformative Arts Fund, giving grassroots organizations the ability to partner with institutions like the Art Museum and MoCA for grants totaling $250,000 to $500,000 to do world-class, equity-focused arts projects in Cleveland. And so we have a plethora of arts and culture in our city, but what we haven't done a good job of is telling that story and connecting the dots, and that's something I really want to focus on as I continue being mayor of this great city.
Great. Thank you so much. Chuck Hovind, if you wouldn't mind, if you could come up here. And
we're going to take a short break.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
Celebrating the life of Timothy Lee Trumbull Jr. through supporting students is our goal. We celebrate him by reaching back to pull others into a better position to receive a college degree and thereby setting the foundation for a stable financial future, helping students reach their full potential. Since 2019, the Timothy Lee Trumbull Jr. TJ Memorial Scholarship has been helping students at a chance for a full life. You can be awarded a single-year scholarship of $2,000 simply by meeting these criteria: being a full-time undergraduate African-American college student between the ages of 18 to 25, currently enrolled at Tri-C, Cleveland State University, Central State University, or any other HBCU with a minimum GPA of 2.5. Applying is easy. Just complete your e-application, your short essay, send your resume, and one letter of recommendation via email. And of course, a copy of your transcript. Easy, right? We hope to continue to share the warmth of TJ, who will be remembered as an outgoing person that made friends everywhere he went, by lessening the financial burdens of furthering your education. Questions or concerns? Contact United Black Fund of Greater Cleveland Development Coordinator Adrian Sims at 216-566-9263. That's 216-566-9263. Before March 30th. That's right, you have until March 30th to complete your application. Visit unitedblackfund.org to apply today. This message has been brought to you by the Timothy Lee Trumbull Jr. TJ Memorial Scholarship Fund, the United Black Fund of Greater Cleveland, and WOVU 95.9 FM. Our Voices United, Burton Belcar, Community Radio.
And welcome back to a candid conversation with the Honorable Cleveland Mayor Justin Morris Bibb and our neighborhood media. We now return live to Studio 3, back into the hands of Director, General Manager, Jay Williams.
We are back live with our mayor here in at WOVU. Trey is holding it down. He's taking calls. I see that the line is lit up. And so we're going back to Rich. And Mayor, we're glad to have you. And we can tell because people are calling and they just...
Oh, they're calling in? Oh, great. I'm happy to be here.
And Mayor, we have a question next from Chuck Hovind from the Plain Press.
Hi.
Hey, Chuck.
Mayor Bibb. I think I asked you this question before, and I want to ask it again.
Mm-hmm.
This is about the Comprehensive Extracurricular Activities Program
yeah.
for Cleveland Public Schools.
Yeah.
I think you did bump the funding from just under $1 million to just over $1 million. I think it's 1.125.
Mm-hmm.
But the promise in 1995, they exempted the stadium
mm-hmm.
from taxation, and they promised the Cleveland schools would be made whole. That means that the amount of property tax that the stadium would have paid to the schools would continue through three different taxes: a parking tax, motor vehicles leasing tax, and an admission tax. And those taxes bring in $20-30 million a year. This current budget that just passed, 1.125 went to the schools, $15 million went to the Browns for the stadium repairs. That should be reversed. The promise made in 1995, it amounted to about $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
In 2013, Raldo reported that the school's portion should have been about $4 million. Current Lastly, the Signal Cleveland just reported that it's at $5.5 million right now per year. And imagine what Cleveland extracurricular programs could do with that kind of money. If you want to have, if you call the arts and culture the soul of the city, you have to seed that. And you seed it by doing programs after school. And this makes a big difference for parents. Be able to keep their kids in school when they're so they can work longer hours. It makes a big difference for attendance. The kids that attend these programs come to school more readily because they want to participate. And it makes a difference for their academics because when they come to school, they do much better academically. So I'm wondering, Gene Tracy he was a teacher in Cleveland schools. He spent every school board meeting for over a decade. He talked about trying to restore this money. Mm-hmm. He petitioned city council members. Nothing happened. Now we just got a letter last year from Earl Savage, who's Tracy passed away last year, and Earl Savage is a librarian in the schools, and he's taking up the mantle. But what does it take to get this promise kept? I mean, there's a big commotion about the McKenzie-Scott money not being properly used as was promised. This is a bigger promise. The amount of deficit to the schools now is close to $40 million. If you count over the years what it's supposed to be and what it's been, I mean, it was started at $2 million and it was bumped down at about 2010 to $1 million. I mean, what will it take for the administration to put this money back where it should and maybe reimburse the schools for all the missing money? The Browns don't even want that stadium anymore, so at least you could take that $15 million. You don't want to put repairs into something they don't even want.
Well, thank you for the well thought out question, Chuck. And unfortunately, I was in the third grade when that deal was struck in 1995, and we can't go back in time.
But let
me say a couple of things to you, Chuck, about the important points that you mentioned. First and foremost, I can't comment publicly on the state of negotiations with the Browns. But know that, you know, the city intends to continue to negotiate in good faith to make sure that we are fiscally responsible and protect the taxpayers of Cleveland. Secondly, we recognize that we have some funding challenges, not only in CMSD, but across the county when it comes to adequate funding for out-of-school time programs for youth, not just in Cleveland, but across the region. And the data is very clear. High-quality, out-of-school time programs work. They keep kids safe. They make sure they have a pathway to go to school and graduate on time. And we also know, because the science tells us this, is that it increases their social and emotional confidence, both inside the classroom and outside the classroom. We are doing a couple things structurally to address this issue. Later this year, I'll be working with the county executive to create the first ever Greater Cleveland Children's Cabinet, a comprehensive approach between the city and the county to explore alternative funding streams to invest in more high-quality out-of-school and after-school programs for kids. The other thing we've already done is we've hired, through the great support of our foundation leaders, we've already hired a consultant to explore public financing options to have more funding for after-school and out-of-school time programming as well. And the other thing I would say is our administration used the historic funding we gotten from President Biden from the American Rescue Plan to invest in children. Millions of dollars to give working families and working mothers scholarships to keep their kids in a high-quality early childhood daycare facility, scholarships for teachers so they could have bonuses to stay at their high-quality daycare facilities, millions of dollars to expand the integrated health initiative as part of our CS education program inside CMSD. And we are also working very closely now with the county executive on the first ever youth mental health workforce task force to encourage more workers to get involved and be employed in the youth mental health, behavioral health sector. And so it's going to take more support from our state, continued collaboration with our county, and some more creativity as a city in terms of exploring alternative financing situations. And I think it's one thing I want to also articulate, because it's important to note, is like many major school districts across the country, CMSD got a lifeline of funding from the government, federal government, during the pandemic. And we used that one-time aid for one-time expenses. And unfortunately, that money is no longer going to be with us. And so that requires us to think differently about the cost model of how we think about these programs. And so I think we have a good plan in place, but it's going to take every sector of our community to address this issue on a short and long-term basis. Thank you, Chuck.
Next question, Mayor, is coming from Richard T. Andrews. From
the venerable Deal Richard Press. Andrews.
OG.
The OG. Real Deal Press.
Don't tell everybody how old I am. I'm not going to say what was happening in the world when I was 5 years old. Most people wouldn't believe it. I heard you make a comment about not being able to negotiate in public on about the Browns situation. So I'm going to give you a chance to boost the city's position.
Yeah.
by asking you, because I'm sure this discussion has gone on within the administration as a responsible entity, but. When you have contemplated what Cleveland would be like, the city of Cleveland, without the Cleveland Browns, without the financial obligations that get entailed from everything with maintenance costs to construction contributions to police protection and on and on and on, there's probably some dollar figure that you are aware of that would then become available that might even dwarf, I wouldn't dwarf it, but it would be a partial and ongoing replacement for ARPA funds. And so when you think about those funds that would be freed up, if the choice were made not to have the Browns in town, but to release them to a neighbor as a shared obligation and let them go to Brook Park, what are the kinds of things that you think the administration might do with those funds?
I haven't thought about it. I will say this. We don't live in a utopia where I can go back in time where, you know, cities and counties and states would not be on the hook for, privately owned sports facilities. We are dealing in a situation where, you know, we have, I think, the competitive advantage to be able to have three world-class major league sports teams all situated in the urban core of Cleveland. And I think that's something that many of my peers across the country are envious of, in terms of the fact that they are all located in the urban core of the city. And it's my administration's belief and hope that we can keep all three in Cleveland for the next 30, 40, 50, 100 years. That being said, I believe that, you know, our sports teams are a part of the civic fabric of our city. They contribute a large share of economic impact and benefit to our city. And that tax revenue is very precious to me in terms of our ability to compete, because I need every dollar I can get in terms of growing our tax base so I can hire more cops and fix more roads and streets and bridges and fix more playgrounds or rec centers. That being said, I believe as a leader that we can do both. I don't believe it's one or the other. That's why I'm pursuing this major transformation of our waterfronts in the urban core, because unlike Cleveland, our peers across the state have done novel, creative, financial things to be creative in terms of how we finance major public infrastructure projects to transform the their respective cities. And through our shore to quarter shore efforts, I think that will be a major boon to grow our city, grow our population, invest in our neighborhoods, and make sure Cleveland can once again be a globally competitive city. Because for far too long, we have been managing decline, right, since the 1950s. In the last 2 decades, we've lost nearly 20% of our population. Since the last 2 decades, we've lost nearly 30% of all traded sector jobs in every ward in our city. You want to know why? We haven't had an economic strategy. And cities that will win in the future are cities that have thriving world-class waterfronts, thriving urban cores, world-class parks and rec centers. That's why I'm the first mayor in history to do a comprehensive study of every park and rec center to ensure that every child has a safe park and safe rec centers that are well-programmed and well-lit in every corner of the city. So it's all of the above. And it's certainly an economic boon to have 3 major league sports teams in Cleveland, and I want to keep it that way.
We're going to break. WOVU 95.9. We'll be back.
Thank you, sir.
I'm Trey Modlin. WOVU 95.9 FM, Our Voices United, News Director. I am the son of Dr. Charles Modlin, Jr., Vice President and Chief Equity Officer at Metro Health, and founder of the Minority Men's Health Fair. Since 2003, my father has hosted this free annual health fair to help save lives by providing free screenings. Dr. Modlin's tireless work has helped countless people discover medical conditions that they would not have otherwise known about. Free screenings are available to all who attend, including for cholesterol, diabetes, digestive health, glaucoma and vision, and more. There will also be enrichment activities, wellness sessions, community resources, guest speakers, and a job fair. You too can be part of it. This year's Minority Men's Health Fair will take place on Saturday, April 27th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 2 MetroHealth locations, MetroHealth Cleveland Heights Medical Center and Tri-C Metropolitan Campus, Alex B. Johnson Campus Center, Room 201. For more information and registration, visit this website, metrohealth.org/MMHF. That again is metrohealth.org/MMHF. You can also call this number, 216-957-3862. 216-957-3862. Your health matters. It's your chance, no matter your race, ethnicity, gender, or sexual orientation, to make a commitment to better health for a stronger and healthier community. Save the date. Register today for the Minority Men's Health Fair, Saturday, April 27th from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. I'm Trey Modlin, WOVU 95.9 FM, Our Voices United, News Director, and the son of Dr. Charles Modlin, Jr. This message was brought to you by MetroHealth, the Minority Men's Health Fair, and WOVU 95.9 FM, Our Voices United, a Burton Bell Carr community radio station. And welcome back to a candid conversation with the Honorable Cleveland Mayor Justin Morris Bibb and our neighborhood media. We now return live to Studio 3, back into the hands of Director General Manager Jay Williams.
Going back to Rich, we're having a great time. We have a lot of people in studio, and it's a wonderful opportunity to have our mayor before he actually does the state of the city. We have a sneak preview. Rich, that's in right. Your hand.
And thank you so much. Thank you so much, listeners, for tuning in to WOVU 95.9 FM. We have our community, our ethnic and community media outlets that are asking questions of the mayor. We're also opening up the listener line. You can ask questions yourself over the phone. next question that the mayor gets is going to be from publisher Ray Robinson of Get Lit.
Mayor, first off, I want to thank you for taking your time to sit with us. But most importantly, no one has ever had money available for the arts. The state of Ohio is one of the worst places for the arts, so that's very important. Kudos to you for at least paying attention to that. Many of our children are very artistic, but if you don't have an outlet for it, those are dead dreams dying inside. So I'm glad that you have this. I work with a program where we have young girls that are doing braiding. They get their certificate. We've got driver's ed. I teach a journalism and radio program to the kids. We deal with kids from 6 to 17. Mm. And so it's very important that they have these outlets. I know that our parks and recreations are one of our biggest assets. We love ripping and running outside, and then we love going inside and clowning there as well and getting some juices out. What's our plans for some of the parks and our rec centers?
We got some major plans in store, and your opening comments, Ray, reminds me of that great quote by Langston Hughes, who, as you know, spent a lot of time in Cleveland. And it's one of my favorite lines from one of my favorite poems of his. It says, "A dream deferred for one is a dream deferred for all." Right?
Yes, sir.
And so I think in that line, Langston Hughes talks about the interconnectedness of all of our destinies together. As a community. And we are really focused on making sure we have the same level of quality in our rec centers and parks that you see in the suburbs. So we're doing a couple things to address that. One, as I mentioned before, we have engaged an organization called Olin Consulting, and they're working with our administration and city council to do a comprehensive master plan assessment to examine the state of every park and rec center in Cleveland. And the early data shows us that over half of Cleveland residents aren't going to our recs and parks because of the lack of quality and the lack of safety. That tells me we don't have a competitive product. So we have some work to do. The other thing we intend to do later this year is I'll be introducing legislation to create a separate division of parks and recreation, so it's no longer under the Division of Public Works, and we're going to have a dedicated new leader running that new department, because I believe it requires someone who is waking up every single day focused on our parks and our rec centers. And we've already had over 100 candidates from across the country and locally apply for that position. The other thing I would also say is we have to be honest about the footprint of all of our parks and rec centers. In some parts of our city, we have way too many rec centers that many folks aren't using. So instead of having maybe 5 in one ward, maybe we only need 2. And so this master plan assessment will give us the right data to inform what's the right footprint given Cleveland's current future forecasted population. So I'm excited about this project. We have a lot of work to do to overhaul our systems, but we're going to be ready for the summer. We're trying to recruit lifeguards and folks to work in our rec center. So if you have an interest in being a lifeguard or working in our rec centers this summer, please reach out to us at City Hall. And we're going to have programming in every rec center this year across all 17 wards, because it's so important that young people have productive things to do. Because when I was growing up on 121st and Dove, I was either at my church at Vacation Bible School or the Boys and Girls Club. And when them streetlights came on, if I wasn't in that house, y'all knew what was going to happen. Grandma was getting that switch. So we want to make sure young people have productive things to do this summer. Right. Thanks, Ray, for the question.
Excellent. The next question will be coming from Rhonda Crowder of Rhonda Crowder and Associates. We also work together on supporting this whole community media network.
Hi, Mayor. I am currently working on a story for Freshwater Cleveland about the 2024 Project Noir survey. I know that the Commission on Women, Black Women and Girls have been established. Commission members have been sworn in. So my question to you is, what are some of the issues that you see this commission taken on as it relates to improving conditions for Black women and girls here in Cleveland?
Well, Rhonda, I'm so happy you asked me that question. I take this issue very seriously because I was raised by three strong black women. My mother, who I adore, Mama Bibb, what we call her, the first mother of Cleveland. My late grandmothers, Sarah and Irene. And the things I saw that they experienced, no woman, and particularly no black woman, should ever experience in our city. Complaints about the fact that they were never paid the same as their peers. Complaints about the fact that they were sometimes harassed at work. Complaints about the fact that many times they were often overlooked for that promotion that would have prevented my mom from working two jobs when she could have just had one job. And so those are the issues we want them to be focused on our inaugural Black Women's Commission for Women and Girls. And, you know, I'm so excited about the work that Chi-Chi is leading at Project Noir with Enlightened Solutions. We want to really examine what are the structural barriers preventing black women and girls from succeeding in our city. And from a government perspective, how do we deploy the right policies and programs to eradicate those barriers? But also, I think what's needed, Rhonda, now more than ever, how do we change the narrative of Cleveland to be a destination for black women? Because black women in many parts of our city are the backbone of our neighborhoods. They're the backbone of our families. In many households, they are the breadwinner in the household. And so we must do a better job of going from one of the worst cities in the country for black women to be one of the best cities in the country for black women. I want this to be a city where black women are flocking to because they're starting businesses, owning real estate, right? Creating new companies, leading government. It's so important we create that new ecosystem and change that narrative.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question will be coming from Ulysses Glenn, publisher of the East Side Daily News.
Hi, Mayor. How are you doing?
Good to see you, as always, sir.
Good to have you with us today. My question is pertaining to this Cleveland School Board.
Yeah.
I wonder, which we've had both an appointed school board and an elected school board, and I wonder would an elected school board be more effective than the appointed school board, since we've had both of them?
In all honesty, in this climate, I don't think an elected school board would serve the residents of Cleveland and the students of Cleveland. When you look across the country, you're seeing the politicization of education from the extremes of both sides. And I think it's undermining public education at its core. You look at what's going on in Florida, Texas, parts of Ohio, in particular southern Ohio. And as one of the only mayors in the country and one of the only mayors in the state that has mayoral control of the schools, I don't take that responsibility lightly, because I know that my journey to becoming the youngest black mayor in Cleveland's history would not have been possible if I didn't have teachers, mentors who looked out for me, both when I attended public schools and I also attended private schools as well too. And so we've made dramatic progress inside CMSD over the last 10 plus years. High school graduation has improved. Attendance has gone up. We have great new models of education, from Campus International to John Hay Science Academy to the Cleveland School of Science and Medicine. The list goes on. But the key question we have to answer now, as we think about what public education looks like post-pandemic, is how do we go from being a system where there's islands of excellence to a system of excellence? So what does that mean? Well, what it means for me is that a resident in Lee Harvard shouldn't have to, you know, have their, you know, daughter or son or granddaughter or grandson take two buses to go to a high-quality high school. They should have one in their neighborhood, right? Or we shouldn't just have one trade school on the west side. We should have trades programs in almost every part of our city, because not everybody's going to go to college. And guess what? That's okay. We need electricians and plumbers, because you can't outsource those jobs. And so we want to accelerate the great work we've done under the Cleveland Plan. We got some hard choices to make under the leadership of Dr. Morgan. I'm confident in his ability to lead CMSD, and we have all the ingredients. We just have to make sure we keep our foot in the gas and keep everybody engaged as we chart the next chapter of CMSD's future.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And your next question will be coming from Pierre Bajani of Profile News Ohio. Profile News Ohio is the Arabic Middle Eastern newspaper for the greater Cleveland area.
Thank you, Rich. Mayor, thank you for hosting us tonight.
Always good to see you, Pierre.
Thank you. It's great. My question to you is about, get two sections in it. One about the slum landlords and perspective on your perspective on that. And how me as a landlord also, myself as a landlord, how to do, to be effective and how to slow down a little bit the hammering on landlords about, I'm not a slum lord by any mean, but other than slum landlords, how to be able to be effectively be a landlord and be in the city. Another question, how do you see our... your concern about the safety and the crime in the city. Mm-hmm. So these are two section questions here. Please.
Thank you, Pierre. To your first question, look, I want Cleveland to be a place for responsible people to invest in our real estate. Right. And unfortunately, we have too many bad actors investing in our city, particularly on the east side. And we experienced this firsthand. Last year, I was knocking on doors with Senator Sherrod Brown trying to get residents signed up for the Earned Income Tax Credit. We knocked on one door right down the street off of 131st Street in the southeast side. And we walked to this resident's door. She didn't have stairs on the front doorstep. No stairs. She had tried to call the landlord. Couldn't get a hold of the landlord. You know why? He or she was in Belgium. And then we knocked on the next door, and it was another out-of-state LLC investor company trying to encourage that resident to sell their home to an LLC investor. So this has been happening for decades, really since the Great Recession of 2008 in Cleveland. And you know where it's happening even more in our city? On the east side of Cleveland, where a large share of all the properties and homes owned on the east side are now owned by LLC out-of-state investors. That is unacceptable for me. And I believe in capitalism, don't get me wrong, but I believe in responsible investment in our city. So we've done a couple things to address this. We, with the support of City Council, passed the most aggressive, ambitious piece of housing policy the city has ever seen, our Residents First policy initiative. It does a couple things. Number one, it requires every LLC investor, if you're out of state, you have to have a local agent, right, that lives in Cuyahoga County or a contiguous county so we can hold you accountable in a court of law. Secondly, we now are going to be able to issue civil tickets if you don't upkeep your home and you are an LLC investor, so that that way you can't pass the buck and change the name of it without making sure that that house is up to code. And the third thing we've done is we now have a point of sale inspection for the exterior for any vacant land sold in the city of Cleveland. This is going to create a new floor for responsible housing investment in our city and make sure we're encouraging good behavior. We just held one out-of-state investor accountable in court just a couple days ago. Monte Teo lives all the way in Vegas, right? We took him to court. I don't care who it is, right? If it's a family member, I don't care who it is. No one is above the law, and it's time we put people over profits in terms of housing investment in Cleveland. Now, in terms of safety, we have made a lot of great progress on public safety, and that doesn't negate the pain and the trauma of the tragedy that we still see far too much on our streets because of the illegal flow of gun crimes in our city and bad behavior in our city. But since I took office, homicides have been down since the height of the pandemic by 14% since 2020. We have now one of the highest homicide solve rates in the country. Nearly 80% of all homicides are now being solved in our city, when the national average is just 55%. We have now made historic investments to beef up our police force, new wage increases, new increases in cadet pay, new sign-on bonuses, and we are one of the first cities in the country to put $10 million of American Rescue Plan funds that we got from President Biden and a brand new endowment fund to invest in community grassroots solutions that we know can reduce crime on our streets. So we're making good strides, got a lot more work to do, but it is my number one priority to make Cleveland one of the safest big cities in America, and I'm not going to stop till we make that dream a reality.
Thank you, Mayor.
Excellent. And next we have our Armani Capri for the Cleveland Observer. A few questions. Also, audiences know Armani from WOVU.
Yes. So good to see you, Mayor Bibb. Thank you for being here today. My question is kind of multifaceted. Happen to sit in some unique positions, having a show here on WOVU, freelancing as a journalist with the Cleveland Observer, also being a Central Committee precinct person with the Democratic Party in Maple Heights. Many times, politicians or mayors and their city administrations face a challenge, mm-hmm. which is how do you promote the city as a great product for people to invest in, as an attraction to visit, and also address the issues that are going on in the infrastructure of the city. So my question to you is, how do you justify prioritizing something like development along the waterfront when also paired with issues in the infrastructure of the city and communities within Cleveland? You hear people complain about the streets, safety, economic equity, things like that. Some people in the city of Cleveland may feel like those dollars that are being prioritized to development that may cater more to a niche mm-hmm. audience, and some of the living that may be built up in connection to that development could be better spent in addressing safety issues, in addressing our roads, the potholes that people disappear into, mm-hmm. you know. So my question is, how would you address that? And also addressing it in a way that also explains some of the challenges that you as mayor and leadership face with also having to make Cleveland an attractive place to be.
That is such a complicated and nuanced challenge. And I would say this. One, as the chief executive of the city of Cleveland, I have a fiduciary responsibility to do whatever I can to grow our revenue, grow our tax base, grow our population, so we have the resources to invest in the basics. So what does that mean? That means doing what we've begun to do since I took office over 2 years ago, from investing in a new HR system internally at City Hall so we have modern ways to pay our union brothers and sisters when they get a new bargaining contract, from the work we've done to have a brand new city website so it's easier for residents to navigate how to get a birth certificate or a death certificate or how to get a permit to put a new roof on their home, to the work that we have done in Cleveland's Southeast Side. I'm the first mayor in history to have a dedicated multi-pronged economic strategy to change the trajectory of Cleveland's Southeast Side. Over $15 million of ARPA funds that we're going to be leveraging to create over 150 plus more million dollars of economic investment coming to the Southeast Side. And at the same time, thinking about the future of our city, you know, our largest portion of American Rescue Plan funds we've gotten has been on taking $50 million of that funding and taking 1,000 acres of vacant land that we see in our city, primarily located on the east side, and turning that brownfield land and the shovel-ready greenfield sites to bring back jobs to our city. So, in my opinion, Imani, it's not one or the other. Because when we make it a conversation about one or the other, who's going to win, who's going to lose, you know what that gets us? More of the same. More of the same. And what has more of the same gotten us over the last 75 years? Historic population loss. Loss of Fortune 500 companies, right? Loss of jobs in our neighborhoods. A loss of a confidence as a city. We have to change that narrative. And so I'm a mayor who believes in D on a multiple choice test. All of the above. Because I don't have the luxury to pick one or the other, because the challenges I inherited as the first new mayor in nearly 20 years were so big and stark and deep that I've had to just choose one thing to focus on. I wouldn't be doing what you all elected me to do in the first place. You all elected me to do one thing, right? Bring bold, dynamic, visionary leadership to Cleveland, because Cleveland couldn't wait, right? And that is the mandate that I have been trying to govern on since I took office on January 3rd of 2022. And to me, what gets me excited is the fact that if we make these major investments and make these big bets now in our waterfronts, because I don't care if you're black or white, rich or poor, everyone loves being around the water. Everyone has a story of when they've been to Lake Erie to see a sunset on a date, or when they caught their first walleye on Lake Erie, or when they went to that first bar on the flats when they turned 21. Water brings people together. And cities that are going to win in the 21st century are going to be cities that have world-class waterfronts. And I refuse not to let Cleveland be on that list. Because for 100 years, we've been talking about what? Waterfront development in Cleveland. Probably since Mayor Tom Johnson. I think we can get it done. And let me tell you why I think we can get it done. I was just at Third Space Action Lab with two of my dear friends, Evelyn Burnett and Mordecai Cargill. And they work with our master plan design firm, James Cornerfield Operations, to do community engagement for our lakefront master plan. And our lakefront master plan community engagement process was not done in a way that we've typically done lakefront planning in Cleveland, where it's all the big wigs go to the Union Club or the Chamber of Commerce, they get in the room, then the smoke comes out and we got a plan. Now we got to sell the plan. You know what we did? We went to Dave's grocery store. We went to barbershops. We went to libraries. We did charrettes in church basements all across the city. And one senior told us, she was 90 years old. She says, I've never been more excited about a lakefront plan in my lifetime. You know why? She said, because I see myself in the plan. This is why this is important to me. This is not about east side, west side, or downtown. This is about giving that 90-year-old faith, hope, and optimism that her grandbaby will choose Cleveland over Chicago or LA or New York when that grandchild finishes college. That's what this plan is all about.
I have one follow-up, if that's okay. Yeah. And thank you for taking the time to go in depth with your answer. For the 90-year-old who saw herself in the plan, that's great. And I think that from the look of people's faces in the room, that resonated with a lot of people. But my follow-up question is for the 16-year-old that is struggling to read mm-hmm. because of the literacy issues mm-hmm. here, or can't find a job and so gets into crime mm-hmm. because they need something. That you know where I'm going with that. What do you say to the members of our community in Cleveland or communities in Cleveland that don't see themselves in that development because of some of the other issues that I address? How would you address them and their concerns of not identifying with
them? I would say everything that we work on at City Hall is focused on the core issues. Safety, making Cleveland a safe city. improving public education, making sure that our roads are well paved, that we're trying to fix as many potholes as possible. There is not one issue I'm not working on as mayor. But I will tell you this. If people are relying on government to be the only source of hope, I can't save you. I can't. That's where you all come in. Telling positive stories, talking about the hard issues and how we're coming together to solve these hard issues. Government plays a role, but government is not the role.
I agree.
And I'm not Jesus Christ himself or herself. That is not me. But what I can do is bring people together, try to work on hard issues, try to do what we can to solve these problems, and get the trend line going in a better direction. But residents have to be a part of the solution. Before I go to the next question, I want to leave you one final quote. My grandma Sarah always would tell me this when I would get down on myself and say that I couldn't do anything, whether it be school or sports. She would say, "Baby, you got to be a participant. You have to be a participant in your own salvation." Mm-hmm. So you have to take responsibility for yourself to make a difference. And everybody in the city has to have that same level of responsibility.
Just want to make it perfectly clear to Rich, over time, we keep going. We'll put another 10 minutes there because we want the mayor to have at least give us a sneak preview of what's going to happen at the state of the city. I don't want you to leave here without...
I got a couple more minutes left.
Yeah, okay, yeah. I want you to deposit that. So we go to Rich, and then I don't know if Uni, but we wrapping it up.
Excellent. All right. Next, Mayor, you're going to hear from Rosie Palfy from rosiepalfy.com.
Hello, Mayor Bibb. First, I want to thank you for meeting with us again.
Yeah.
You mentioned the shore to core to shore.
It's a mouthful, huh?
Project.
Tip District. Yeah.
Yes. And what I wanted to talk about was Cleveland being a good neighbor to the other cities in the suburb. I happen to live in Parma, which is the second largest city in the county. And I will say that had I been a Cleveland resident, I would have voted for you in the primary the general election.
Hopefully I count on your vote in 2025.
I can't vote for Parma, but...
Oh, that's right. That's right. Never mind.
Yes,
that's right.
So my... One of my concerns is I'm going to tiff about the TIFs because I am a disabled veteran. I live on a fixed income.
Yep.
There are a lot of seniors and other people living in the county with disabilities, and we're paying for property taxes to fund the HHS levy.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a very impressive, ambitious plan. How do you balance this with how this is going to affect your neighboring cities?
Well, I would say this. We want to be a good neighbor, and I think we have been a good neighbor to the county and the surrounding suburbs in the county. And I think it's important to note that you don't get a thriving Cuyahoga County without a thriving Cleveland. I mentioned, the city losing thousands of residents over the last couple of decades. We've hemorrhaged our tax base over the last couple of decades. We have to do something differently to reverse that decline. And we have to think differently about how we go from a growth mindset versus a decline mindset. So with our TIF that we propose, a couple of things I want to be clear about. Number one, none of this money is going to any private developer or any football franchise or any sports team for their stadium. That's clear. Secondly, no taxing entity will lose any money that they currently aren't getting from this TIF. And then the other thing I would say is, what's good for the city is going to be good for taxing entities like the library, the metro parks, Tri-C, et cetera, because we have more economic activity, we have more jobs, more people, and a growing tax base. Now, if we do nothing to grow our city, guess what? We're going to have to keep raising taxes on a lower population. We have to grow. And it's incumbent upon us to take this moment, to meet the moment, to finally grow our city and our region, to bring jobs, bring economic investment, because 100% of zero is what? Zero. I refuse not to try something major that can change the trajectory of our city. Almost every one of our peers across the state has done this. Cincinnati did it 10 years ago. They're growing. Columbus did it 10 years ago. They were growing. Guess what big city in the state has been declining? Cleveland. We got to try.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
Hi, you're with WLVU 95.9 FM. I would like to thank you, Mayor Biff, for coming to our house and all of the other media lists that have joined us today. Really quickly, because I know you have to go.
Yes.
So we've talked about housing. We talked about development. Can we talk about affordable housing for the middle class? What is your plans for that? Because we've heard so many complaints in the past year.
Well, just a couple days ago, we broke ground on a brand new housing development in the Fairfax neighborhood called Aurora, which is going to have hundreds of brand new units, over 30%, all for workers that are in the affordable sector, right? Entry-level workers. Over 30% of those housing units are for entry-level workers. We have deployed over $40 million of capital as we speak to bring online more affordable and workforce housing units. I'm in talks right now with some large banks and foundations on another $115 million plus housing fund to spur more affordable and workforce housing in the city. And we just passed in our planning commission a new form-based zoning code change to our zoning code, so that way it's easier for us to encourage and have more affordable and workforce housing in the city. So we have to do this. This is a major challenge for us in Cleveland, and we need more support from the state and federal government as well, too, because cities like Cleveland, we can't do it alone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, give us the sneak preview.
Sneak preview is going to be a great speech. It won't be too long. It's the halftime report on the first term of the Bibb administration. Going to talk about all the great work we've done to modernize City Hall, to invest in public safety and reimagine what safety looks like in our city. Going to talk about the work we're going to be doing around open data and new technologies coming online, but also talk about the great stories of how residents have been engaging and all the positive work our administration has been focused on over the last 2 years. And hopefully folks will tune in, engage, and be leave a little bit hopeful about the future and the promise of Cleveland, because I truly believe that Cleveland's comeback is America's comeback, and we can show the nation that we can be a model of a city where the American dream is within reach, affordable, and I think that's what I wake up trying to do every single day as the mayor of this great city. So,
thank you, sir.
Look forward to the speech.
Rich, thank you. Thank you. All of you for being here this afternoon. We would go to the caller, but we're going to take it away because we're already in to the program that is scheduled to air. So Trey is in your hands. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you.
You can turn the buttons off. You're the DJ.
And that was WOVU's conversation with the Honorable Cleveland Mayor Justin Morris Bibb and our neighborhood media. Keep it locked in right here on WOVU 95.9 FM. Our voices united, a Burton Bell Carr community radio station.
It's your mother.
This Mother's Day.
And I was just calling to just remind you.
The Mother's Day concert is coming. Bring her to the show. Then look at her and say,
Mama, we made it.
Don't disappoint your mama. It's a Mother's Day celebration. Yolanda Adams. Ja'Kalen Carr. John P. G. Saturday, May 11th, 7 p.m. at Playhouse Square. Also,
I got joy in my soul.
It's Charles Jenkins. And it's all hosted. hosted by funny man Jay Lamont. It's a Mother's Day celebration fit for a queen. Saturday, May 11th, 7 p.m. at Playhouse Square. Tickets available at playhousesquare.org. A Mother's Day celebration sponsored by Compassion International.
And WOVU, 95.9 FM. Our voices united. Burton Belcar, Community Radio.
WOVU, LP Cleveland.